may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden, exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again, as Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this Friday edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We're joined by Steve Quayle from stevequayle.com and Sig Swanstrom. Go to his website, sigswanstrom.com. The doctrinal divide over defending ourselves and families, perverting scripture, and the emasculation of today's Christians is the topic. Before we get back to Steve and Sig, just want to bring you a quick word from Minuteman Rocket Stoves. Folks, go to MinutemanStove.com. Check out the portable, convenient, and pretty cheap price. Yeah, inexpensive
price.
Survival stove. This stove is good not only for camping and outdoors cooking, but it is great in survival type situations or natural disasters. When you have no power, no means to cook, you can get this awesome. It's a souped-up ammo can with an eighth-inch steel plate. Also welded in is a burner on one side. It comes with these awesome fire-starting sticks. I think they're, I don't know if they're magnesium or what they are.
I don't know, but they 8,
000,
work, man.
10,000, 15,000 strikes per stick. And this stove is great. Folks, go to MinutemanStove.com. Check out the stove that they have on their site. Check out the fire starters. And if you have any questions, the email for Mr. Miller is right there.
I'll tell you what. We put it through the paces. Eric the Tech put it through the paces. It has passed. We don't endorse anything. We don't use ourselves. And let me tell you something. Minuteman Stove, the best stove on the market. If you're looking for that high-quality stove, it's not a camping stove. It is not a camping stove. This is something, too, you can seal up and put in your car.
Yeah, and I talked to Lane today, the owner of MinutemanStove.com, and he is just thrilled with the response from the Hagman and Hagman audience. And if you did purchase a stove, send him some feedback.
Yeah,
he would love to hear if you used it, what you think about it, if there's any improvements that can be made, and anything. He wants to hear from you. Again, MinutemanStove.com. Check out their Minuteman Rocket Stove. It's efficient and affordable.
And folks, our guest tonight, Steve Quayle from stevequayle.com. You know Steve. Visit his website. And also, look, preparation has a lot of aspects to it. He's the guy for precious metals, okay? If I need precious metals or want to buy precious metals, I don't deal with anyone. We will not accept anyone else in terms of, you know, well, hey, can we get on? No, it's Renaissance Precious Metals. Go to stevequayle.com and click through to Renaissance Precious Metals. He's the man to go.
Get my iron ounces from.
There you go. No, let me tell you something.
Actually, gold was up today from the bear exit. It was up almost $80 an ounce, and I think it closed or is around $60 the last time I checked, but a significant move in gold due to the bear exit.
That's right, and as Steve indicated, I think Friday, today, was an appetizer for what's coming on Monday. You know, and at the very heart of this, and I just have to really, I think it's through divine intervention here, divine instruction that Steve Quayle and Sig Swanstrom are on tonight. Given the conditions we face right now, the geopolitical, political, domestic situation we face right now, that here we are. Any Christian out there wondering whether self-defense is biblically sound, justified? What does the Bible have to say about this? The sanctity of life versus the need to save your own or that of others. The Bible, according to Sig Sigstrom's book here, God, Guns, Guts of Firearm Defense, Amazon.com, SigSigstrom.com, says, Sigstrom writes this, the Bible teaches us that we are to do what we can to stop an act of violence that is likely to cause serious bodily harm or death. Now, you know what? From a biblical perspective, we've got that responsibility, and we better do what we need to do to protect ourselves from armed aggressors. It is an act of love and compassion to protect or stop acts such as murder, rape, kidnapping, robbery, and so on.
I don't want to take away from the topic, but for fact checkers out there, I saw an article. Apparently, 9/29/2008 was the big.
Oh, this is good, Steve.
Stock market crash. Apparently, that was 7 years, 7 months, 7 weeks, and 7 days ago today.
From that stock market.
Now, this is what I read. I don't know this to be true. I haven't done the math myself. But for folks out there, apparently September 29th in 2008 is 7 years, 7 months, 7 weeks, 7 days from today, which the Dow fell 611 points due to, and you had the Nikkei down. The markets are haywire.
Steve, go ahead and take it, sir.
Again, Joe, for the record, gold was up $100 and silver hit 88 cents higher last night. And then obviously the central banks and a lot of Federal Reserve money went into the market to try and stabilize it. Here's what it's showing everybody. The countries that have already announced their contempt for the U.S. dollar are some of the biggest gold holders in the world. For instance, China, number one. Russia has huge gold. And by the way, I can't calculate exactly because I don't know all the reserves, but they made billions of dollars on a $100 move, okay? Billions and billions. The fact is that people assume everything. They take their safety for granted. They take their lifestyle for granted. And what I've learned, and Sig, you can address this. By the way, I want to spell his name because some people might be hearing Sig and Sid. It's S-I-G, Sig. By the way, that's what I carry as a handgun. Swanstrom, S-W-A-N-S-T-R-O-M, S-I-G. Swanstrom, SWANSTROM.com. So, Doug, what we're talking about tonight is this. It should be painfully obvious that given a world-changing event, the potential for the EU no longer existing within, who knows, weeks, months, years, whatever it is, the potential for those that want to provoke World War III, the potential of nuclear weapons being used, because they've already been moved. Russia, I think, has basically shown some extreme ability to basically demonstrate their EW capabilities, electronic warfare capabilities, and still you've got people wanting to go to war with Russia. The global chaos is a primary demand, and World War III is a demand that the New World Order wants worse than anything. We're living on vapor of God's breath and love for humanity. So the lost of the flock, that's pretty good, can come back. But I want to share something. It's most people will not take personal responsibility or accountability for their actions. Every woman that takes a handgun course, I would give you a hug and in a righteous way, you know, or shake your hand and say thank you. To every man that allows his wife to do the preps that a woman does, don't fight them. I'm telling you, you guys, listen, again, every day from everybody I know, and I don't hear from them every day, but I hear from the people who are strategically placed at least weekly, the food issue becomes more and more dire. The record heat due to geoengineering becomes worse and worse. Record-breaking heat, obviously in Nevada, Arizona, California, even San Francisco. The idea that basically the vending machine siblings, children who think they can go and just put in change or bucks now and have, you know, your Coca-Cola candy bar or whatever come out, by the way, all GMO and all very bad for your health, but people won't do the basics. The basics is, and food first. I've been answering emails from people in the last, probably a week. I have $500. Should I buy silver? No, no, no. Buy food. Go to your grocery store. Get the best that you can get with the highest protein count. Buy bags of rice. And by the way, some people can't eat beans. Buy bags of rice and some canned meats while it's still available. You can only plead so long for people to act in their own best interest. But when you deal with the entitlement mentality, it also filters through to people not wanting to be responsible. I've dealt with that for 35 years in the precious metals business. People are happy when the metals are going up. They're mad and sad when they're going down. Everything that's happening, they have to say, well, you're causing fear. No, I'm just telling you, there's fear in the market. I don't cause it. So the point is, when it comes to your personal safety, here's the priority, in my view. Right now, food first. Please, ladies and gentlemen, go on Numana. The reason I'm asking you to call Ryan at Numana is because he stays up 24-7, depending on his calls. He's the only other guy I know that's up when I'm up, okay? I don't stay up 24-7. I crash various hours through that period. But, again, you can call him at 406-581-0182 or just go to my website over on the Numana link. It's the one with the angel with a sword drawn. Number two, get a good water purifier. And a water purifier is different than a filter. When I went on talk radio, Sig, 25 years ago, one of the very first, I think the very first show I did on the two most precious commodities in the times before Jesus returns will be fresh water and edible food. And I said, you'll be drinking water that you used to just walk through with your boots on. The other thing is the volcanism that's going on around the world, okay? That's destroying crop yields. Look up Mount Tambora. Look up the summer that didn't happen. Look up the weird weather that we're having. You can't put that much volcanic ash in the upper atmosphere and not have sunlight be effective. And then I say this, the number one mindset you have to acquire is situational awareness and protecting your family against thieves, brigands, murderers, pillagers, rapists, plunderers, and everybody that hasn't prepared. And see, would you give out, because we have a lot of people in Texas and a lot of people listening all over the country, how do they get a hold of you to see your classes? I'm assuming it's on the website, but I don't want to assume anything. Share, basically your basic teaching times or whatever and how to get a hold of you if they want firearm training, because I have a huge audience in Texas.
Yeah, I don't want to discourage people, but the reality is that so many people are finally waking up that our classes are basically filled from now to the end of the year, and we're trying to add new sections to that, but the demand is really high, and for us, we limit our class size to make sure we have really the top education possible. So our largest classes are only 24 people, and most are 12. So it's our classes are basically filled, and all of our instructors are former police officers who have personally had deadly force encounters. So that limits the number of instructors we can locate as well. So our instructors, you know, have operated in major urban areas, and they have had deadly force encounters, and that has been kind of our niche, and it is, as a result, our classes are full. But if you contact me through, the easiest way is through the website that they were mentioning, sigswanstrom.com, where you can look at Texas Republic Firearms Academy.com, which, by the way, operates as a not-for-profit, and Camp Barkley Tactical. .com. Those are the resources, and we will try to help connect you with good training. The problem we encounter with so much firearm training is a lot of it is conducted by good-hearted, nice people who really want to help, but very often they don't have the experience. They may know how to be a fabulous target shooter, but that does not mean that they're able to communicate the skills that you need for a deadly force encounter. Even trained people can have a hard time in these situations. One of my friends, he's never lived the situation down. This was some years ago. Police officer. He's in uniform. It's one of those rare nights in the Los Angeles area that nothing's going on. 4 a.m, he's bored to death, trying to stay awake, so he stops at a strip mall and decides to park his cruiser and just walk the strip mall, checking doors and windows, and he's walking along just trying to stay awake, and he turns the corner to go to the back of the building and comes face-to-face with a burglar who's standing about 12 feet away from him, a gun pointed at his head, and my friend drops his service pistol and starts shooting. The bad guy starts shooting. In a moment, they find that both guns are empty. Neither of them has been hit. And my friend jumps on the burglar and handcuffs him and takes him off to jail. But this guy was on the pistol team. He was a good shot. The problem was he was taken by surprise. But the same thing could happen to someone else who isn't trained for a tactical situation. When you encounter the adrenaline rush, the fear, the surprise, all these other things, the regular shooting skills go out the window. That's why it's so important to practice practical skills. Tactical is practical, as Steve points out, and stay on top of the practice regularly. You go to some great firearm school and take a class, and then if you haven't, a year later, you haven't been to the range shooting, you know, you've basically lost the benefit that you achieved from that time in the class. You have to practice with some regularity. If you can't get to a range that allows you to engage multiple targets and to move and shoot. And by the way, one of the best ways to simulate adrenaline rush is to, if you're at a range that will allow this, you leave your gun on the table with somebody else there, of course, and you run about 2 blocks to get back to that table where your gun is and then pick it up while you're panting and try to hit the target. You'll see that if you're scoring, your score goes through the floor because of the increased respiration, which is similar to an adrenaline rush. So we have to practice in ways to take these things into account. And there are many good firearm self-defense schools, but check closely not just into who founded the school, but who will be the instructor for the class that you're thinking about taking. And you know, if you can't get into one of those schools, a police officer or a military person who has actually been in combat, you know, most military people don't actually see combat, even though they might have been in theater. So you need to pick someone who really has the skills of engaging the enemy with a gun. But a police officer is probably a best choice because that is different than military engagement. But training is important. If you don't have access to that or you can't afford it, running the scenarios in your own mind and then trying to set up as practical a training as possible. And let me add, too, there's an over-fascination with quick draw. Quick draw is ultimately not very important. Drawing the gun safely and being on target is far more important. Back in the old days when there was dueling, we've all seen the pictures of them standing back to back and then walking, 12 paces and turning and firing at the other guy. Well, in reality, the person who won those engagements was not generally the one who got the first shot off. The one who won was the one who had the fortitude to stand there while another guy's shooting at him, and yet he takes aim. Because, a pistol or a rifle, you're talking about a very small projectile that's coming out of there. And, to be on target when you're in a high fear, high adrenaline situation is not something that comes automatic. So training is great, and if you don't have any other option, even something as simple as an airsoft gun that is in the same style as the gun you normally carry, and you can sit in your family room with a cardboard box and at least you're practicing trigger pull and sight picture and handling of the gun. It's not anything close to actually shooting your real gun, but for some people that's the only alternative, and especially with the price of ammunition being very high, an airsoft pistol that shoots just little 6mm plastic pellets is both relatively safe as well as giving you some aspect of practice if you don't have access to a range. But again, you can't get the idea that just getting a gun is the answer. And I want to make sure I make it clear, too, everyone shouldn't have a gun. If you have anger management problems, if you have a history of some kind of mental illness, if you're taking drugs or you drink, those kind of issues, if you're not in complete control of your faculties, both physically and mentally, you should not be carrying a gun. You maybe shouldn't even own a gun. When Jesus gave his injunction to his followers to sell their coat and buy a sword if they didn't already have one, it was an injunction. It was not a commandment. And the difference is that a commandment is something that applies to everyone. Thou shalt not commit adultery. That is a commandment. But when it comes to an injunction, it relates to those people who have the capacity to follow that direction. So again, it could be mental issues, just slight instabilities. It could be that you're on a regular regimen of prescription drugs that says you shouldn't operate dangerous machinery. A gun is included in that. There's various reasons, that you maybe should not carry a gun. But the flip side of that is also true. If none of those things apply to you and you're mentally and physically able, I read that injunction from Jesus as something that we need to take to heart. That is our responsibility. And again, just owning a gun, of course, you have to train. But if you've got it at home and you're gun safe and it's not with you when you needed it, I'll tell you, if you ever need a gun and you don't have it, you're going to have to live with that the rest of your life. So people talk about, what if I use my gun and what if I made a bad choice and I have to live with that the rest of my life? That's very true. But if you don't have your gun and you don't take action, you have to live with that as well. And that's not pleasant. It's never happened to me personally, but I know people that it has happened to, and years later they're still haunted by their negligence, that they knew they should have had a gun with them, they didn't, and a family member was killed or injured or raped as a result. And that's another aspect of things we have to live with.
I'll tell you something, Sig. I agree with you. If you got a concealed weapons carry permit and you leave the house without your gun, you know what? I mean, I've actually turned back leaving my house. I've turned back to get my weapon, not because I expected trouble, but because I didn't want to have that to be haunted by what you know could have been because of that moment. You know, I mean, who knows? It's likely when you leave it at home is when you might need it. I don't know, but I just never want to be in a position where I will be regretting my inability when I had the ability to take action. But can I get your take on the, because you were a former police officer. Many people today, and I believe, are rightfully disturbed about the militarization of our municipal police forces. I mean, they're driving around in half tracks, tanks, and not half tracks, but tanks almost, you know, armored personnel carriers. I understand. I understand the stated reasons, but John Whitehead, the author of A Government of Wolves and the other book, another book in Radley Balco as well, talks about the militarization of police. Can you address that from your point of view as a former officer?
His books are excellent, by the way, and I think he's right on target. I am very concerned with this. On one hand, the certain amount of military equipment is essential. I mean, from, you know, what, you know, how are the bad guys armed? And you have to confront those people with automatic weapons and so on. Well, you better be able to deal with them as well, because, I mean, it is terrible maybe to say, but in SWAT teams was when the public is in trouble, they call the police. When the police are in trouble, they call SWAT. And that is the last line of defense. I mean, if the police or the SWAT team can't deal with it, then who's going to deal with it? All that we have left then is the military. And we don't want the military operating within the United States, period. That is not their role, and that is prone to snowball into all sorts of terrible circumstances. So when the martial law is declared and the military are on the street, that is a very dangerous situation on many fronts, and that's the topic of a whole other conversation. But as far as the militarization of the police, having an armored vehicle like a Peacemaker is one brand, or a Bearcat, they're basically like a Suburban that has a new body on it that is an armored body. No problem. In Orlando, they used a Bearcat to ram through the wall in the restroom to affect the entry and the and saving the people that had been held hostage, and that's how they finally engaged this Muslim, was by breaking through that wall with a Bearcat. And they had to do it more than once, by the way, and the first one went in the wrong place, but anyway, the heart was in the right place. Those kind of vehicles and that kind of equipment, totally reasonable, because you're talking about, you know, being able to have maybe four occupants and sustain a moderate small arms fire. What concerns me is that police departments are basically unable to buy a surplus Humvee that is armored, which holds four people. The government will not sell them to police departments, but they will give them an MRAP, a mine-resistant vehicle that is commonly used in Iraq and Afghanistan. Why does our government give away thousands of MRAPs that cost the cheapest one is $500,000. They're typically $500,000 to $1.5 million, and they're giving them away by the thousands to police departments in the United States. Why do we need mine-resistant, armor-protected urban tanks in the hands of our law enforcement? We don't, unless they're anticipating something that we're not seeing right now. why do we need agencies like NOAA, what's NOAA stand for? National Oceanographic and Atmospheric. Has absolutely no law enforcement function, but they have substantial SWAT teams. The post office has SWAT teams. The EPA has SWAT teams. The Department of Energy has SWAT teams. A little more understandable because of some of the things there. But still, really? Do we really need SWAT teams for all these agencies? It came out in the news today, I think it was the Washington Beacon or whatever that paper is, Washington, D.C., said that we now have more arms in the hands of our government agencies, SWAT teams, than are in the hands of the U.S. Marine Corps. Do you think there's a problem with this picture? Now, obviously, the government is preparing for anarchy. In my book, Prepared, Ready to Roll, I don't draw conclusions because I'm trying to stay away from opinion, but I list out the different activities that the government has been engaged in its preparedness efforts over the last 30 years, and it is sobering. In fact, when I wrote that book, after I was done, I picked it up again and started reading it from the beginning. I was so depressed when I got to the end that I went back and cut out about 20% of the book, and I added more details of hope into it, because we are not to live in fear, but we are in hope. And let me just inject here, too, not only should we not feel fear, we should feel honored that God has allowed us to be born into the time we're living. In Ephesians 2, it says, Ephesians 2, 8, 9, or 10, rather, Ephesians 10, for we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. In other words, we were born into this time for a specific purpose. I don't care if you're famous, you're competent in firearms, you have absolutely no competence you feel like in anything. You were born for a specific purpose, and God blessed you that you were born into this time. We've had people, saints, throughout 2,000 years that have wanted to see what we're about to see ourselves. So we shouldn't be panicky about it. We should be honored, and we should also be prepared, not just so that we can survive. That's the least of it. We are to survive so that we can be God's agents and making a difference in the world for the time that's coming. So we serve him through the times that are coming. We're about to enter into a time of opportunity for Christians that hasn't been seen in many, many generations. But it's only going to be available to us if we are prepared. We have to be ready for it. Otherwise, we're just going to be busy trying to take care of our own needs and feed our family and so on. If we're prepared, we're going to have incredible opportunities to serve our Lord. And that's, you know, we're talking, we don't want to go out and not have a gun when you needed it. I don't want to be in our future unprepared, so I'm just scrounging around trying to eat and find drinking water when I could be out there really making a difference for the kingdom. So those, you know, the militarization of the police is just another sign of the times that the government is anticipating a major time of unrest. I mean, the amount of ammunition that has been purchased by the government, the amount of small arms, the larger arms, the automatic weapons, it is absolutely sobering. When I was growing up, there was still the nuclear threat with Russia or the Soviet Union, and we had civil defense stations all around the city, and they were in basements or whatever, and their effectiveness could be debated. But the point is the government was trying to get air raid shelters and equip these shelters so people had a place to go to protect the public from what they were afraid would happen in the event of nuclear war. That's not happening today. You notice that? We don't have any civil defense shelters anymore. They're all closed. Even the ones that still existed have been closed and the content stripped out of them. The only thing the government is doing now is working on continuity of government plans, and each federal department has been given a presidential directive to create its own continuity of government plan and facility. So we have all these elaborate secret facilities around the country that are designed not to care for the public, but to just care for the essential, who they consider the essential people, which are the government personnel, so that the government survives even though the public doesn't. So with these kind of preparations, I mean, this sounds all just crazy conspiracy theory. I'll tell you, it's all out there. It's all public domain information. I've listed a lot of it in that book, Prepared, Ready to Roll. You know, it's all footnoted. You can go on the government websites and pull down the information. It's all there in plain sight. It's just underreported. People like Steve and Doug and Joe talk about it. And if you're used to listening to this radio show, you know about it, but a lot of your neighbors don't. And that's why I wrote the book, as a tool for us to be able to use to help our friends and neighbors and family members wake up to what's coming. And it intentionally doesn't tell the whole story, because you tell the whole story, it's overwhelming. But it tells enough to show that things are anticipated, changes are coming, and the future is going to look very different from today. If not, you know, in the next year or month, it certainly, something will be coming down in the lives of our children. So we better be doing what we can, not to just prepare for today, but prepare for a longer-term future that looks very different, and getting our kids equipped and self-reliant as well. When we were living in Guatemala, on one of the attacks that we had on our installation, we had our manufacturing plant and a hangar right on the international airport, and then our office on the other side, and we had an apartment above it. And the government of Guatemala had a barracks right next to us, so we had, I think it was 80 soldiers billeted there for our protection. And one night, the guerrillas attacked, and we wake up to the sound of mortars and automatic weapons fire, and RPGs are being fired. And I can look out the window in our second-story apartment and see the troops engaging the insurgents just right in front of our building. Fortunately, they're shooting mainly north and south, because we're in kind of a corridor. And I look on the other side, because we were above the aircraft hangar, and the same thing is happening on the other side of the building. And the next thing I know, here my kids are. They're both, I don't remember how old, you know, junior high age, young. And they're crawling into our bedroom from their room, which is 60, 70 feet away. And it suddenly hit me in the middle of this battle, what have I done to bring my family to a war zone? And then that clicked over immediately to a sense of pride that they knew how to act. They knew how to respond. And even though they were only junior high age, they knew how to handle a gun. And they were not intimidated by the circumstance. They were responding appropriately. And some years later, I was with my son when he was going through a interview to get into the ROTC program at the University of Washington, and after his interview was over, the major walked out and got me off to the side and said, you know, this is really embarrassing, because your son has seen more combat than I have. And I had to laugh, but at the same time, that's very sobering, And I'm not suggesting that that is a good idea to bring your children into harm's way. But what I am suggesting is it's not just us as men that need to be prepared. Our spouses, children that are old enough should know how to handle firearms. They should know how to defend themselves. And we should learn how to operate together as a family as well. The military calls it a fire team. And we have some training in that regard as well, where a family learns how to operate together as a fire team, supporting each other. It's not, you know, like the old Western where the wife is just reloading the gun. In this day and age, it's everybody knowing what they're doing and working together cooperatively. And, you know, if you're just dealing with a single armed robber, yeah, that's not necessary. But if you're in a time of anarchy, I can assure you it is, because nobody's coming. Nobody's coming. You pick up the phone, it's probably going to be dead. You pick up your cell phone and dial out, and it's probably going to ring busy. Where I live a few weeks ago, I'm also on the volunteer fire department, and we got notified through our radios that the telephone system was down for two-thirds of the county. The people didn't realize you picked up your cell phone and called, you got connected to a tower, and you could leave a voicemail message, maybe, and phone calls coming in was the same thing. The public did not realize that they were completely cut off in their communication. Alarm systems didn't work, landline phones didn't work, and cell phones didn't work. In this case, it was because of a construction accident on a freeway. It severed the fiber optic cable. But if that doesn't remind us how frail our communication system is and our ability to communicate with each other in emergency. So, you know, our contingency plans, as Steve was mentioning, food, water, you know, we're talking about that stove. Those are great stoves, by the way. You know, we have to be prepared for all aspects of responding. And, you know, people talk to me about bugging out. Well, yeah, that's great, but where are you going to bug to? You know, it's not a matter of just having a backpack with a few supplies in it. You have to know what you're doing with it and where you're going with it. And your kids have to know as well. If they're off at school, do they know where they're supposed to go? Do they know to wait at school until you get there? You know, what if it's 2 days later? Are they still going to wait at school? Are you telling them that's what they should do? Well, maybe that's the right thing to do. But you better figure out a family plan, and so that your wife isn't walking home and you're walking to get to her job and you're passing each other on parallel streets and you never connect with each other. So we need plans in place. We need these supplies, but we also need how to use those supplies. And then we also need to practice enough that everybody involved knows what they're doing. Not just you as the aware and informed person, you know, has all these supplies together, but does your family know how to use them?
Well, Doug, let me add in to this, too. I think it's critical. The obvious way to test how you're going to respond is just shut off. You know, this is a basic prepper exercise, but it's good. Shut off the power in your house, go to the, you know, and then obviously just go try and go through the day. You'll find you turn on lights by habit, you go to turn on the TV, and then don't use your phones, okay? And then start to think. Everybody else is in this boat too. I think probably one of the greatest fears most people have, and it takes preparation and it takes mental control and emotional control, is what happens when you're totally cut off from anybody else except your immediate family and the Lord. Well, then you rely on, obviously, the words of Jesus, "Behold, I'm with you unto the end. I'll never leave you nor forsake you." But having a plan, what is it? Just say you've heard this too. Failing to plan is planning to fail. But implementing the plan, you can have the most elaborate plan, But when you go in it, just like running and getting your heart rate up, then trying to stay on target, you know, and remembering that drill, front sight, front sight, front sight, and your hand is moving up and down, and you're going, good night, this is harder than it looks. That's when you realize that you haven't trained enough, you haven't thought it through enough, and you haven't prepped enough. Just like today, okay, I want to give everybody a heads up. We don't know if Monday will be a black Monday, and if today was just the opening salvo, next week it's conceivable, depending, conceivable. I'm not saying God's in control. I am saying God's in control. But it's conceivable that we could have a whole week of some of the most erratic movements that have ever been experienced, because we're in no man's land now. And so if we see ATM cards going down, credit cards going down, banks being interfered with, cyber attacks, any form of power outages, cell phone outages, telephone outages, whatever, I think, so you can say amen to this, probably one of the most unusual things that can help, that can happen to a human being, is when the normal rhythm of their life is upset, and the normal input and the normal, if you will, perceptions are totally cut off. In other words, you're in a realm of sensory deprivation. And sensory deprivation, ladies and gentlemen, was one of the first exercises that Central Intelligence Agency used for MK Ultra experiments, along with scopolamine and LSD and radio frequency and everything else. But that's when you understand. That's when you go and look at your pantry or whatever, your kitchen cupboards, and you go, if this doesn't get better, this is it. Then you go and you find out that you didn't store any water, and guess what? Your pump doesn't work, and the city's water is not working. And then you think, well, I've got 50 gallons or 75 gallons in my hot water tank. I better go get that. And, you know, so there's all types of scenarios. I think the biggest thing that people are unaware of, Sig, is that the level of violence, and this is nice people, cannot even begin to imagine the level of violence that's going to come against them. Is that a fair statement?
Oh, absolutely. Imagine your neighborhood with normally friendly, nice people, but the average home doesn't have more than 3 days of food supply. So you've gone through this disaster. You know, maybe it's localized, maybe it's an earthquake, maybe it's a Katrina kind of incident, or maybe a terrorist incident or something more serious. But if it's widespread, the panic is in place. And after 3 days and the food disappears and there's not enough drinking water, what do you think an ordinarily good, nice father or mother is going to do to feed their children? Do you think they're just going to knock on the doors and ask for some food? Well, yeah, initially, that's probably what they're going to do. But if they're not getting enough food to feed their family, what do you think this person is going to do? Ordinarily, they're a good person. They don't have any criminal history. They've never been arrested for any kind of crime. But suddenly, when they don't have food to eat, the personality is going to change. The circumstances are going to change. And that's why, you know, you may have a couple weeks' supply of food in your home, but unless your home is really a defensible space, people talk to me about getting generators and whatever. Well, I can tell you, if you're the only one on the block with the lights on, where do you think they're going to be coming? And, you know, it doesn't matter if you have a year's supply of food if you can't defend it and you're not in a defensible space to be able to defend it. So the ability to bug out to a safe haven location becomes important, whether it's just a weather emergency or whether it's something more serious than that. We need a place to go. I've been in conversation with a number of people about developing a readiness university, which is going to be a cooperative effort to bring people together who are experts in defense and safety, water purification, storage, shelter, food, nutrition, medical, sanitation, transportation, communication, and on it goes. so that people can really work on getting prepared holistically. I can't tell you how many people I have that talk to me and says, well, we're ready for everything because I've got 3 gun safes full of guns and lots of ammo. And, I said, well, how does that ammo taste? You know, after a while, it must get pretty bitter. And the reality is, if you aren't prepared with food, it doesn't matter that you have guns. And so, you know, all these things are necessary, whether it's just being responsible for preparing for a natural disaster. I mean, Katrina taught us that the government can't come in and solve our problems. And we've had major storms since, and they didn't do any better. Now, we know, I know through my research, that the top people in FEMA are busy with continuity of government. They're not concerning themselves with preparing for FEMA-like incidents. So we're getting the second level of expertise applied to these natural disasters. But the point is that the government isn't going to be there, whether it be a natural disaster or something more substantial. And if it lasts for more than a few days, it's going to get pretty ugly. And it did in Katrina. And it has in these other places as well. When I was in, involved in a SWAT training exercise at Fort Ord in California, in 1989, when the big San Francisco earthquake hit, 6.9 magnitude, and I remember martial law was declared, and it was a big deal, and freeways collapsed, and I forget how many people were killed, 70 people or something killed, and billions of dollars worth of damage, and I was patrolling a street in Monterey. And I see this woman come out of a grocery store, and she's got 2 baskets full of toilet paper. And I couldn't resist, so I stopped to say, what are you doing with all this toilet paper? And she said, well, it was the only thing left in the store, so I bought it. And this was just hours after the earthquake. That grocery store was completely cleaned out. So if we don't have these stockpiles of supplies readily available to us and enough with us in our vehicles so that we can get back home or wherever it is we're going to go, we're going to be in trouble pretty fast.
Right.
So
I can't encourage
us all enough to take these preparations seriously now while we still can.
People should be praying through the weekend because, again, with Britain already exiting the EU, and Deutsche Bank being one of the biggest banks in the world, teetering on insolvency, once these things begin to fall, they will affect everybody in the United States. And so I'm going to encourage everyone to literally be praying because Monday, nobody knows what Monday is. There are already people out there saying that Friday was just a prelude to Monday. Maybe Monday it turns around temporarily, but again, if anybody, wants to get a hold of you, go to sigswanstrom.com, and you have email contact there, right?
Yes, I do.
Yep, and if anybody wants to get a hold of me through the weekend, I start trading precious metals on Sunday at about 4 o'clock. So if you want me to call you, now anybody with under $1,000, go buy food. If those of you who are serious, I'm serious, you cannot send me an email, what's a good time to call, and I will call you. Again, ladies and gentlemen, the thing that is critical is you have to take the safety of your family and yourself. And that's why I recommend this. Any woman who is married to a gun guy, don't have your husband teach you. Get competent tactical instruction from someone else. Chances are your husband doesn't have the competency. Not that he can't shoot a paper target. It goes for this. Your husband can't stay up 24 hours to protect you. You never know where you're going to be. And say, don't you find that teams, husband and wife teams that take their personal safety and their family safety together is really a good point?
Yes, and it's really relationship time as well. And I would add to that children too. starting, I mean, in our programs, we have children involved as young as 12 years of age, and it, of course, depends totally on the maturity of the children.
Guys, man, I hate to cut this short, man. I'm so sorry, but we've reached the end of the hour already. That just flew by. Sig Swanstrom, God bless you. Thank you so much. Steve, thank you.
Excellent.
Thanks, Doug.
Wow.
Bye-bye. Sig, thank you. God bless you, sir.
Next week, John Moore Monday, Gary Stearman, Bob Ulrich on Tuesday, Paul McGuire Thursday.
Thursday, Paul McGuire.
And we're just getting started. We'll see you next week.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.